welcome to episode 219 of Board Game Blitz, a podcast about all things board games that you can listen to in less time than it takes to warm up a hot tub. Board Game Blitz is sponsored by Gray Fox Games. This week, we're talking. First, we discuss a couple games we've played recently, Sync, Ravel, and Panda Spin. Then, we talk. And now, here are your hosts,
Ambie
and Crystal.
Before the episode, we have an announcement. I made another t-shirt design over on TeePublic, and this one's like a Halloween-y themed meeple. It's a skeleton meeple, or meeple skeleton? I don't know. It's like a meeple shape with a skeleton inside it, so you can go get a Halloween-themed t-shirt if you want. Check out our store. It's linked in the description of this episode.
And it sure seems like this is the beginning of a series of shirts, if I am correct. So I'm going to have to start coming up with new ideas for you to sketch out, because I'm loving the stuff you're coming up with.
Yeah, and it's fun sketching, like, during the day when I'm watching my kids, I can, like, sketch.
That's awesome.
I got two review copies recently from the publisher Rabble. Sync and Rabble. These are both party games designed by George Lee and published by Rabble. So Rabble came out in 2018 and Sync came out in 2024. So first I'm going to talk about Sync because I played that one first, but it's a more recent game. Sync is a team word party game. It plays 2 to 8 players in 20 minutes. It's kind of like a Just One feel if you've played Just One. We've talked about Just One a lot. So you're trying to guess words. People are giving clues that are 1 or 2 words in this one. So you have like tokens that have 1 or 2, and each team has a set number of tokens. And then a person is trying to guess a word. Like there's a card with 5 numbers on it, 5 words, and then they pick a number, just like Just One, and then they're trying to guess that word. And then the teammates can all think of a clue, and then one person will say, okay, I have a clue that's 2 words, or I have a clue that's 1 word, and then they say, okay, you can give the clue, and they use up a token to give a clue. And so the person can either guess or ask for more clues at that point. They just get one guess, and like if they guess wrong, then the other team can steal it by spending one of their tokens. The other thing is there's a special sync token where you're saying, okay, I'm gonna give it in one clue and that's it. Then if you use that token, then you give the clue and then the person has to guess. They can't like ask for more clues. So that one you get double points though if you get it. So it's like betting that you can do it in one word, which we try to do a lot because, well, we only have so many sync tokens and then you want to like get them done. So I played it. There's a co-op version and a competitive version. We played both. The team version actually has more downtime than the co-op version because like you're taking turns doing the guessing. So like when the other team is going, you're kind of just waiting for them. I mean, you are trying to think of the word if you want to steal. But with us, the stealing didn't feel worth it because you have a set number of tokens and that's for your team's guessing or for the other team's. If you steal, you have to spend a token. So it didn't seem worth it because you have to like make sure you know it definitely when you're stealing because you have to spend a token. And if you get it wrong, then you don't get the point. But otherwise, like you can spend a token on your own words and probably get a or possibly get a point if your team is good at guessing. So yeah, we didn't end up like actually stealing that much and it didn't actually seem that worth it. And then also like with the clues, you're just thinking of clues by yourself and it's only one at a time. So it didn't seem as interactive as other word party games we've played. And so I think like collectively our group decided that we like Just One better. and we were just like,
I think it would be hard for any game of that nature to beat Just One just because Just One is so good.
Yeah. And even with the team version, like I like other team word party games better. But yeah, so Sync. Like it comes in nice packaging, so like for people who aren't into board games, maybe like the packaging might look more professional, I guess. Like it's nice and modern looking. So
I'm going to interject here, which you're not expecting, but when you held up the box, I was like, I think I've played a game by that publisher. And just last week, and we're going to talk about this later in the episode, but I was at a retreat with some board game friends and I played a game by this publisher. I did not know the name of the publisher of the game, but the style of the front of the box, that like square on the front that has the information on it, that like that white box is very unique looking. And I immediately recognized it, looked up, and I was like, oh, Lovestruck, which is a party game. Also, I played by them. It is I'm not going to do a full review right now, but I wanted to say, like, it's a simulation of a reality TV dating show where some people are there for the right reasons, and some people are there secretly for the wrong reasons. And if you're there for the right reasons, you're trying to get, like, at the end of the game, be paired up with somebody also for the right reasons. And if you're there for the wrong reasons, you're trying to be paired up with somebody for the right reasons, because you're trying, you're, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. It's, and everybody has personas and stuff like that. It was actually a really cute, like, weird take on a reality dating show. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I have to give Rabble credit for, like, most board game boxes, aside from, like, the publisher logo, are relatively hard to distinguish unless they use, like, the same artist for, like, I would say, like, Red Raven Games, you know, like, it's the same person doing art for all of their boxes, so you can generally recognize it. But in this instance, it's not necessarily because it's the same artist, although it might be, I don't know. But that little box on the front is unique. I've never seen that before.
Yeah, they don't even have, like, a publisher logo on there. It's just, yeah.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I instantly went, I bet that's the same publisher, and it was. So, good on you, Rabble. And Bloodstruck was not a review copy. I just happened to play it with some friends randomly. So
yeah, but I think they're making a lot, they have a lot of, like, party game, like, this type of game for more casual party game, because their other game, Rabble, this was also a review copy, this was published in 2018, so this might have been their first game since the publisher is named Rabble.
That would be my guess, because
this one's a Monikers like or Time's Up type game. If you've played Monikers, Time's Up, Fishbowl, Celebrities, those are, like, the public domain names of that. So it's a team game that's kind of like charades, but there's three rounds. The first round, you can say anything to try to guess a word. And then the second round, you can say one word for people to guess the same word. You have, like, the same word cards each round. And then the third round, you're just doing charades. So, like, in this one, you have word cards with descriptions on them. There's also a naughty cards deck that you can take out if you want. It comes separately, so you can, like, put it in if you want.
That's nice, like, having the option. Yeah. But not, yeah.
And then they also have challenge cards that you add, so this is what makes it different than Monikers. Also, like, another thing that's different from Monikers or Time's Up is that the shared card is only for your team, so your team gets 20 cards or something to guess, and the other team has their own 20 cards to guess, so you don't have to remember what the other team is guessing.
Oh, that's I that's interesting. I kind of like the shared experience. Yeah, it's really funny when you know what the card is and they're not getting it in Monikers.
Yeah.
But
yeah, so for us, yeah, I also like Monikers better because of the shared thing. I found that when we played it, it was not as engaging watching the other team play because you don't care about their words, and then you're not, like, trying to remember their words. So yeah, it wasn't as exciting watching them. But then the challenge cards made it more fun to watch them, because the challenge cards say, like, oh, do it facing the other way, or, like, do it with one hand behind your back or something. Like, so they have different challenge cards that do things. But those were kind of, like, forced funny stuff, which is funny to watch, but I don't usually like that type of funny in games where it's like, okay, you have to do this.
It can be fun, like, but it can also be frustrating, right?
Yeah. And then, like, some of them are very different than others. Like, some of them are a lot easier than others to do.
So, like, whether it's fair or not, kind of. Yeah.
They do make it harder to remember the cards, though. So it was harder to remember our cards because of the non-shared pile. So, like, when the other team's going, it's hard to remember your own cards, because if you're watching them. So yeah, I found that harder. But yeah, like, I mean, I already have Monikers and I love Monikers, so this doesn't replace Monikers or anything, but I think it was pretty fun for people who don't have Monikers or want, like, another nice box.
I wonder if it would be, if having the two decks would be more enjoyable if the decks were paired. This would be a lot of cards, so I think it would be probably not realistic, but, like, if you had pairs of decks and those
that were, like,
decks,
similar,
yes, had similar but unique items in them, so that way when you're listening to the other team, it you're getting clues that almost relate to things in your pile, and so they can, like, throw you off. Maybe
setup would be so hard for that, because, like, you shuffle all the cards and pick them, but, like, how would you keep that separate?
Yeah, you wouldn't be able to, right? You, like, you'd have to play with the single, like, decks every time, and, like, then you'd run play out, and then you know what they are, and
But yeah, that was Rabble and Sync, published by Rabble.
I am going to do not really a full review, but kind of a first impressions, little quick review of a game that I've only gotten to play once, but I felt was worth mentioning now. I do not own it. It's coming out, I believe, at Essen, which is in the very near future when we're recording this. And it is a trick-taking slash card-shedding game called Panda Spin. What's funny, I actually did not realize until I looked it up before we recorded that this is designed by Carl Chudik. And I was like, wait, what? Like, I did not realize. Carl Chudik is probably like most famously known for innovation.
Glory to Rome.
Glory to Rome, yes. Like the really small box, but complex strategic games. And I have notoriously in the past not been a fan of most of his stuff aside from Red 7. And I don't know of other trick-taking or card-shedding games he's designed. Maybe he has and I'm just not aware. But this didn't feel like a Carl Chudik game when we were playing it. So I thought that was pretty neat. So Panda Spin, if anyone listening is familiar with Tichu, which I have talked about on the show before, T-I-C-H-U, which is a classic card-shedding slash trick-taking team-based game, Panda Spin bears some similarities to Tichu, but it is not team-based. It is all, everybody is on their own. And there are some very unique mechanisms within it that are different than Tichu. So in Panda Spin, the cards that you get dealt are double-sided, and one side is the like orange animal, and the other side is the blue animal. And so you can flip them upside down to see one versus the other. And you always start with the orange animals basically in your hand at the beginning. But to get access to the blue animals, you have to lose tricks. So the blue animals are always pretty much like universally better than the orange ones. Like when you flip a card over, it will often become far more useful and or powerful to the extent where like the orange version of the card might have like a single number on it and the blue side might literally have three of a kind on the that one single card. So for those not familiar with card shedding games, generally one player will play a type of thing, whether that is a run of cards or a set of cards or multiple sets of cards. So like for instance, you could play 3 2s and 3 3s. Like you can play sequential sets of cards. And then other players have to beat that type of set to be able to play after you, and you keep going around and around until everyone passes but one player. That player then wins the trick, and everyone else then at that point, if they played all orange animals, can take all the cards they played back into their hand and flip them to the blue side. So you're trying to get rid of all of your cards first. That's the goal. But by flipping your cards to their blue sides, you make your hand generally infinitely more powerful, like way easier to get big, powerful things out and potentially win tricks. If you're playing blue cards out, you can never pick them back up, even if they were played with orange cards too. So the only way you can pick cards back up is if you're playing their weaker, all of the weaker sides. There are also special icons on some of the cards that do special abilities, and there's a couple other little nuances to the mechanics that I didn't get into as deeply in my first play. But the reason I wanted to bring this up now rather than waiting until I had a chance to play it again is they recently did a Kickstarter for this game, which has ended, but there is still currently pre-orders available on BackerKit at the moment. I do not know how long that's going to last, but I believe when this episode comes out, at the very least, that will still be open. And I imagine we at least have a few fans of trick-taking games out there. Greg. just my friend Greg happens to like trick-taking games quite a bit. So I wanted to mention this on the show because of that. And for those of you who are going to Essen, I believe it will be there as well. So there's a lot of opportunities to potentially see this game, play this game, or acquire this game in the near future. So that is why I wanted to bring it up, even though I haven't gotten to dig into the nuances and the strategy. I've said this before, like, I don't think I've ever played a trick-taking or card-shedding game and hated it. At worst, I'm like, okay, that was fine, right? Like, it's not my favorite for any of that genre. This one felt real different. Even though it bore similarities to Tichu, like there are bombs that you can play in Tichu and in Panda Spin that kind of will break the rules of the game to some degree. But this one, it's not team-based, so, like, I can never get T2 played because you need two teams of two people that are equally-ish skilled or knowledgeable of T2 to be able to play it, like, really, and that never happens. This game feels like I could get into the table more often, and it still gives me that T2 vibe, so I'm excited. I definitely want to get my own copy. So, Carl Chudik, designing a card-shedding game. Who knows? Maybe he does that a lot, and I'm just unaware, but that was Panda Spin coming out. It says 2025 as the official release date, but I believe there will be copies available at Essen, and it is designed by Carl Chudik and published by Moongate Design. As many of our listeners slash watchers on YouTube may or may not know, Ambie and I do not live in the same city. We are a decent ways apart from one another, proximity-wise. And so while we do get to hang out and record the podcast with each other and we chat on Messenger relatively frequently, we do not always get to just catch up on each other's lives, especially like all of the board gaming things going on. So we are going to actually just spend this episode chit-chatting with each other. Yeah. And you all get to listen in.
Yay. Yeah, and Crystal, you just recently, you already mentioned this, but you recently went to a board game retreat close to where I live, but not close enough.
I know. It was kind of close, but yeah, like it was just a little too far for you to be able to make it up there. Yeah, there was a group of board game content creators. I'm gonna probably avoid names just because I don't know, you know, I don't want to spill everybody's business in case people don't want to talk about, like, whatever. People are weird.
Also,
about
if you
things.
Forget someone,
also that. But I will give props to Shay Parker for organizing the event. For those of you who don't tend to go to board game conventions, a lot of us that are board game content creators, really genuinely, when we go to a convention, we want to meet new people, play new games, interact with people who happen to be fans of our content, if those people are there. And as a result of all of that, even though we've become friends with other content creators over the years, we often don't get to spend a lot of time with those people because we're busy doing other things, events and panels and, you know, just interacting with other people. And so we don't get to hang out with our friends that much. And there is a small percentage of board gamers, like general board gamers, who get weirdly upset when content creators hang out with other content creators. I don't know why, but they're like, the content creators only hang out with each other. And it's like, but they're my friends. Like, I'm a person and I want to hang out with my friends. So that's a very small percentage. That's not the norm. But yes, we did a retreat where a whole bunch of us got together for, I think it was like a total of like 4 or 5 days all told. But some people were like coming and going the whole time. So it was never everybody there all at once. And we literally just hung out for a weekend and played board games and lawn games and video games. And it was honestly one of the most refreshing getaways I've had in such a long time.
That sounds fun. What lawn games did you play?
I got to play Kub for the first time, which we've talked about. It's the it's spelled K-U-B-B. I think Kub is the official pronunciation. I think it's like Norwegian or something. It's definitely European in origin, but it's these wooden, like, lawn games. How are they so fun? I don't understand.
Because
I was thinking, oh my gosh, I genuinely, and I was not screwing with people, when I said I wanted to play, I told them, I said, when we're drafting players, I want to be the last player drafted, because A, I don't want anybody else to have to be last, because that makes me feel sad in my heart, so I was like, I want to be last, and B, I genuinely thought I would be horrible at the game, and so I wanted people to, like, have their expectations set, but you're like, tossing these wooden sticks underhand, end over end, at these other wooden blocks that are standing upright on the grass and trying to knock them over. And then as you knock them over, the other team gets to throw them over to your side. And then you just basically keep knocking things over, throwing them back to the other side, going back and forth until one team has knocked over all of the appropriate things and gets to knock over the king in the very center of the field, essentially. Way more fun than I expected. I didn't think it would be bad, but oh my gosh, I loved it so much. And I wasn't that bad at it. Like, I actually made some really good throws, and everybody, of course, was like, oh yeah, Crystal's bad at this. And I was like, no, I really Like, I didn't want anybody else to be picked last. I could not handle it. In my heart, I was like, no, me, let me be last. But yeah, we got to play Coob, and I'd heard about it for years, and you and I talked about it briefly in our Lawn Games episode.
Oh, I don't remember. Okay.
I remembered the name, and that was about okay. it. I didn't really remember what it was about, but it was super fun. So yeah, if y'all like lawn games and you have a space that I would say, like, it was the space necessary is kind of similar in size, it felt, to like a badminton-ish court, or like if you're playing court, like a couple of rows of cornhole games, that's probably a similar amount of space too for a single Coob game. The other non-board game game that we played that I have to mention was a PlayStation 3 game called Johann Sebastian Joust.
What?
I never heard of it before. Everybody gets a PlayStation Move controller, which have these like frosted squishy dome things on the top of the controller that can light up, and you hold your controller kind of upright like you're holding like a torch or something, and the lights in it are lit up, and then music plays by Bach, and the speed of the music changes throughout the course of the game. And if it's moving slowly, you have to move slowly, and if it's moving quickly, mm-hmm. you can move quickly, and you are trying to jostle the other players' move controllers enough that they get eliminated. So you're literally dancing around, holding your controller upright as
fight.
You like, yes, it's dance fighting. And again, when somebody brought it out, I was like, this sounds kind of stupid. Like, I don't know. And then I watched the other people play it for one round and I was like, okay, I want in on this. It was the dumbest fun. I loved it so much.
Wow.
And I was like, great, now I want a PlayStation 3 and a ton of move controllers just for this one silly game. You could definitely like play it, I imagine, if like it came to like the Nintendo Switch. But the thing is, the move controllers with those lights in them were important because mm-hmm. at certain points the game would tell you to freeze and your mm-hmm. controller would change color at that point to also. So like if you didn't hear the audio indication, your controller would show you. Your controller also showed when you got eliminated. It would turn red when you jostled it too much. So like the lights were kind of important, and I'm like, no other mm-hmm. console has
it
that.
Like something that you could do with your phones. Like there could be a phone game app that does it.
Ooh, that's true.
And it could also play the music too. Like,
okay, so are you and I now going to design a
no?
Because I need this in my life. Like there were seriously 8 of us dancing around a courtyard because they piped. You don't have to be standing in front of the PlayStation. You don't have to look at a screen when you're playing this. So they literally plugged it in the PlayStation inside, and then we all went outside into the little courtyard next to the living room and piped the music out into the courtyard, and we were all dance fighting around the courtyard, and it was delightful.
That sounds fun.
Yeah.
I guess. Yeah, I haven't played anything like that recently.
I mean, nobody has. No, there is Johann Sebastian Joust.
I did play some pinball yesterday. I went to an arcade. Ooh. I went to an arcade with my kids and we played a pinball, but then I noticed there were other pinballs like that still had credits in there because I guess, I don't know, people swiped it and then didn't realize they had to press the start button or something. So I ended up playing a bunch of pinball. They had a Ghostbusters one and a Batman one. My kid wanted to play the Batman one because it has the Joker. I did end up getting Joker multiball, so he was excited about that. And then on the Ghostbusters one, I ended up getting like a high score. It was a high score number 2.
Awesome.
And like I got a replay. Like I did so well that I got a game replay in the game. Because like if you get past a certain score threshold, they give you a free game. And so I got that, which was
cool. That's amazing.
And then the next game, I didn't do well.
I've only gotten a high score on a pinball machine once in my whole life. And it was when I was a teen, I want to say. And it was the Addams Family pinball machine, which is like one of the most popular, I think, of all time. Like everybody loves the Addams Family game. Mm-hmm.
I've gotten one on ours at home, but that's the first time I've gotten one at an arcade. That was
the Addams Family one was at Minsky's Pizza in Blue Springs when mm-hmm. I got the high score. It's not there anymore. Minsky's doesn't have pinball machines anymore, but they did. So...
I used to get high scores on the Galago machine at my work. There was a Galago machine. And so I played it because that was just free play. It's harder to get a high score when you have to pay money for it.
Yeah, right? That's awesome. So I've seen the boys. Well, I haven't visited you in person in a while. So they were obviously younger. And I saw the boys could kind of play pinball even then, which still blew my mind. I was like, oh my gosh, like they're teeny tiny and they're already. So pinball is still an interest of theirs. Like
one of them wanted to play the pinball. And so he wasn't really playing. He just wanted to watch me play. He did the little plunger. And so he did a little bit of the buttons and then he's like, you do it now.
I mean, yeah, little hands, big buttons. Probably gets and tiring pretty quick.
Also, there was no stool, so it was hard for him to see. But he could see over the top.
That's fair.
They're still not great at like the coordination of hitting it only when the ball comes. They just go hit the buttons a bunch.
Which sometimes works, but not always. Yeah. So what else have you and the boys been up to recently?
Well, they recently had a birthday.
Yeah, how old are they now?
They're 5 now.
I cannot. Like,
but 5 is a great age for board games because a lot of the games are like ages 5 and up. And a lot of like the kids' games that you hear about, like the ones that win Kinderspiel and stuff, like those are for ages 5 and up. They're not for ages 2 or whatever. So
I mean, your boys have been able to play games, I think, a little bit above their age range generally most of the time. But yeah, now they're really like they're hitting the sweet spot, right? Yeah.
And one of mine got a game for his birthday. So one of them plays more board games than the other. The other likes doing like crafts and stuff a lot of times. So like he'll play a little bit of a game and then be like, okay, can I go color? like, okay, sure. But the kid who likes board games, he likes pirates too a lot. And so my friend got him Captain Pepe Treasure Ahoy, which is a pirate themed legacy game from Haba for ages 6+. It's fine for a 5-year-old. Like I've been playing with him 2-player and it's become kind of our nightly routine, although not in the last couple of days because I've been busy, but after dinner he would play a game with me. It's basically kind of like an abstract puzzle. You're moving colored pieces around on this like dot and line board, which is the ship. And you're trying to get to the correct colored oars. So each person on your turn, you just move one item, one space. And so like you're kind of moving certain people out of the way to get the other ones to where they need to go. And then there's a timer. So, so you have to like do it fast. So we actually played. He's gotten pretty good at it. Like we played the tutorial. He didn't know what was going on. But then after a couple of plays, now he's like planning ahead and be like, okay, we have to move this out of the way and then move it back. Then like the twin came and played one of the games, but he didn't know what was going on. So then the one who plays it was getting kind of frustrated, like, no, we're gonna lose. So I need to work on like, it's okay, we're still getting points, it's okay, and we're not losing, and even if we do lose, we're still having fun and it's okay. But yeah, like the legacy part adds like a little couple of rules, but the rules are all in the rule book. It has stickers, but the stickers don't do anything. It's just like for fun. So oh, really? He likes doing the stickers. Yeah, like when you finish a chapter, you can get these stickers and put them on the map. And then that shows that you've done the chapter.
Oh, that's cute, though. Like, yeah. So it's not necessarily increasing the complexity of the game. No. But it you is do, showing progress.
They do have boxes that open new parts. And so like we've opened one box and it added a new thing to the rules. But that's like in the rule book. It's not like you sticker a new rule or anything. But like kids love stickers. So he's really enjoying the stickers and stuff. And then it has extra stickers too. Because you pick one of 2 treasures when you finish. And the other one you just get to use for your own sticker collection. So he's like, yeah, I can put this on anything.
Yay, extra stickers.
Yeah. So yeah, he's been liking that.
That's so cute. Well, I'm excited to hear about when you all finish it, like if there's any kind of, you know, neat thing at the end or whatever. Yeah. Else, like I bet there's something cute at the end. Maybe. I imagine. Yeah, yeah.
Like, more stickers.
So probably like here's a lot more stickers or something like that. So how is life in general? Like how are things? I've been keeping an eye on all of the, you know, COVID is kind of like going crazy again and no one's paying any attention to it. Everyone's just kind of ignoring it. But for me, like I've still, since I do suffer from multiple chronic illnesses, I'm trying to be very like still aware of that stuff to some degree. Mm-hmm. So like going to the retreat, it was really nice because prior to it, like in the group emails, everybody was like, get the updated COVID vaccine if you haven't already, make sure you test before you come. Mm-hmm. And I think everybody did that and nobody got sick afterward. And there was, I all told throughout the weekend, I want to say there was probably probably around 20 of us, so I'd say that's pretty good. But, like, I still am not really going out and playing board games in person very often. Like, I am going to Greg's trick-taking meetup occasionally, but, like, a lot of the time when I go out in public, I'm still masking and things like that, just because I've only had COVID once, and I do not want it again ever, if I can help it. So it kind of hinders my ability to go out and do board gamey stuff, which is a bummer, but I don't know, yeah. Like, I've become a little bit of a homebody. Admittedly, this year has been a great year for video games. I've, like, found a bunch of really awesome video games, so that makes it a little easier to stay at home.
Yeah, I mean, I have got kids in school, so I've gone out more. They're gonna get sick with something at some point.
Oh yeah, kids in school, it's an inevitability, right? Like, yeah. You can't.
But we did get our flu and COVID at the same time, all of us, which in retrospect, maybe we shouldn't have all gotten it at the same time. Like, the next day, well, my kids were fine the next day, but Toby and I were both just like,
I did both of mine on the same day as well. And it was weird. For like 2 days afterward, I didn't have any like really intense singular symptoms, but I just kind of felt ugh for like a couple of days. I just like being able to catch up with you. I do want to, like, over the course of the next few episodes, I want to talk more about some of the games that I played at the retreat. I'm glad I got an opportunity to mention Lovestruck during your review segment, which was, I didn't know you that were reviewing so titles random. By the same company. I mean, it was a fun little party game. It's not my favorite party game of all time, but it was cute and I enjoyed it. But yeah, there were a lot of games I got to play at the retreat. The one I'll mention now that I probably should formally review at some point is a classic card game that I've known about forever and have just never played, and that's Fuji Flush. Have you played this one?
Maybe. I think so.
So it is a very, very light card game.
Yes,
where...
I played it.
Okay.
2017.
It's been around for a hot minute.
That's when I played, yeah.
And it is just as good as I would have expected it to be. So maybe I'll do a formal review of that in an upcoming episode, because it feels like a modern classic of sorts, and I really enjoyed it. I wish it was on Board Game Arena, because it feels like the type of game that would be really good on Board Game
Seems
Arena.
Seems like it would be on there.
Yeah, I don't know if... Does Friedman Freeze... Power Grid is on Board Game Arena, but I don't know about many of his other games. But yeah, there were other games I played that I really liked. I did get to try the new Lord of the Rings cooperative trick-taking game, which you also got to play it.
Yeah, I played that last November, I think, for the first time, because my friend works at Office Dog, so we play tested it. And I played it again in like February or something. We played like 5 chapters or something. I'm not sure.
Nice. Yeah, I played it literally like either 1 or 2 days before it got announced. And I didn't know, obviously, anything about it before I played it. So I was like, this is good timing. I'll be able to talk about it. But so if you're listening to this and you want to hear more about that new cooperative trick-taking game based on Lord of the Rings, maybe let us know and we can talk about it in an upcoming episode, because we are out of time.
Yep. And that's it for this week's Board Game Blitz. Visit our website, boardgameblitz.com, for more content and links. This episode was sponsored by Gray Fox Games. Have you pre-ordered your copies of Clans of Midgard and Reavers of Midgard, the card game? What are you waiting for? Visit grayfoxgames.com today, and don't forget that Blitzketeers get 20% off non-exclusive items by using the code BGBLITZ24 at checkout. Join the Blitzketeer community on Discord for game nights, discussions, and more by following the link in the show notes. Support the show by leaving us a rating and review on your podcast provider. And if you like us a lot and want to support us monetarily and get some cool perks, check out our Ko-fi at ko-fi.com/boardgameblitz today. Our theme song was composed by Andrew Morrow. Until next time, let's speak. I don't know what you're playing, so please start explaining. Please tell me, let's converse. Bye, everyone!
Bye! The game is called... oh my gosh, now I'm forgetting it. Hold on. It's, oh crap, what's it called? Why can I not remember the name of the game? It's killing me. It's literally completely gone from my brain. Hold on. Oh, I got it. Okay. It took me a second. It's not free for uninsured people anymore, which sucks, but I was like, I will... Oh.
Oops.
And the Zoom meeting ended. That's funny. Let me create a new meeting.
Forgot I haven't been paying attention to the timer.
Invite.